This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Ian Eagle, CBS, the voice of the Final Four, NBA playoffs. We'll discuss some sleeper teams with him in terms of college hoops, teams that can actually win it all, some NBA stuff. So excited to talk to Ian and excited for this weekend. And boy, what a day Thursday was. The big story, and I don't know what to say about it because we don't really have too much information. Flag goes down early Thursday afternoon. What was a wild day of basketball. Flag gets hurt, looks like an ankle, doesn't come back in the game. I would imagine he doesn't play the rest of the ACC tournament. And then you could even sit him out in the 116 game. So he's going to get a good 8 to 10 days to rest if that's all it takes. You know, assuming nothing's broken, he was back on the bench, so that's a good sign. The question is, can he be back, you know, for that second round game? And you could probably, and it's dicey, you could probably, possibly survive, you know, the 1-8, 1-9 matchup without him. And that would give him a couple weeks. And then you figure by then he'd be good, but it looked bad. You know, couldn't put pressure on it. So we'll see. And to me, the list of teams that can win it all is pretty light to begin with. We'll talk about this with Ian. Auburn, Houston, Duke, if they have a healthy flag, and Florida. And after that, all right, maybe you could talk me into Texas Tech. I think you could. Things break their way. They could win it. They're really good. Outside of that, every team just feels like maybe, but it would feel like they'd have to really catch multiple breaks. It would be Iowa State. Can St. John's shoot it well enough? BYU's played extremely well, including beating Iowa State on Thursday in a really high-scoring game, a fun game. Could they win it? I'm skeptical. Maryland's good. They've got size. They can shoot. They don't have a lot of depth. Can they win it? Probably not. I don't buy into Bama. I don't buy into Tennessee. I just never trust that team. But to me, the list is really four, maybe five deep. And if you don't have a healthy 100% flag, that list gets cut by one. So we'll see how that plays out. But the games just in general, oh my goodness. First of all, DePaul, Creighton, to me, was my favorite game of the day. And there was really a great game in every window. And we'll just kind of go in inverse order. DePaul had every chance to put this game away. Up 11 with 3 or 4 minutes to go. Up 8 shooting a 1-1 where it felt like, and this was about maybe 3 minutes to go, it felt like you make both, you're up 10, and that'll probably do it. They missed the front end of the 1-1. They give up a 3. They turn it over, another 3, and then before you know it, Creighton doesn't even have to foul anymore, and they're right back in the game. Creighton really applied the pressure late and got the game into overtime. And give DePaul credit. In overtime, Creighton had a lead, and DePaul came storming back, was down by 2 with the ball, and had final possession. It looked like they were just going to run out the clock and settle for the last shot. I thought they were going to shoot a 3. I thought they should have shot a 3. The kid cleared everybody out, drove to the hole, got a layup, forced double overtime. But you know, the farther you go in these games, when you're the lesser team, the less likely you are to win. And that's what happened in double overtime. Creighton does get the win in double OT. I was rooting for DePaul. In the 20 years they've been in the Big East, they've never won more than a game in the tournament. This is just a dead program, a dormant program. To see them in a Big East semifinal, and UConn, Nova's playing now. Nova's actually got the lead, so we'll see what happens in that game by the time, you know, we record this. That game will still be going. But there was a possibility of a DePaul-Nova semifinal. Just the fact that DePaul, a Friday night Big East, Madison Square Garden, a Big East semifinal would have been a strange thing. And, man, I thought they had it. I really thought they had it. They gagged the game away. Feel bad for them and what was a hell of a game and a couple other really good games. Texas probably got themselves into the tournament. That was a back-and-forth game. They were down 5 with a minute change left in overtime after they had led most of the game. A&M's up 4 with the ball. There was a scenario where A&M calls timeout as Taylor, their best player, shoots a 3. It was pretty wide open. Shoots a 3, makes it, but it was waved off because they called timeout. End up not scoring. The game goes double overtime, and Texas wins. Texas was the final team out, according to Lenardi, coming into today. So we'll get into some of these bubble teams. There were a bunch of them in action on Thursday, and that is a huge theme for Thursday in terms of the importance of these games. And the other a couple other crazy games, Marquette, Xavier. Marquette was down 10 at half, takes control. They're up 5 with a couple seconds left, and the spread's 2.5, and Xavier bombs away a 3 from the you know, the logo, basically from 40, 45 feet to cover the number. He banked it in. I think he banked it in with the kid from Xavier. The number lands on 2. So you could say bad beat if you had Marquette, but look, you're Xavier catching 3.5, 2.5, or whatever, and you're up 10 at half. maybe it's not such a bad beat, but you get the idea. You're counting your money at that point, barring some miracle shot, and the miracle shot gets through. But the other great game, Arkansas Ole Miss in the SEC game, with a chance to go to the quarters, talked about Arkansas at 250-1, and they're down 15 late in the first half. And before you can blink, they're up 8 points with about 8, 9 minutes to go, a 23-point swing in not that short a period. And that game went back and forth. Ole Miss eventually got a 4 or 5 point lead with under 5 minutes to go. And then Arkansas comes back, has a 3-point lead with 29 seconds to go. Ole Miss ball. Arkansas just needs a stop. Free throws, game's over. They get the stop. They just can't get the rebound. Ole Miss gets a putback and a foul. They make the free throw. Arkansas goes down the other end and misses both free throws. They get fouled. They miss both free throws, and Ole Miss hits a three to win it. So, anyone that jumped on that Arkansas 251, that's just a painful, painful way to end it. But great games, absolutely great games. The drama with Flag getting hurt. And let's take a look at the bubble here. Coming into today, according to Lenardi, that's still the guy I go to. I know some people use Bracket Matrix as the sort of just the guy that, or the way to combine all of these brackets, take basically a consensus of them, which is not a bad way to go. But I keep it simple. Look at Lenardi. Last four in, Oklahoma, who is playing right now against Kentucky as we speak, and they do go and order these. So Oklahoma, then Indiana, who did lose to Oregon. We'll see if that bumps them out. Xavier, who I mentioned, loses to Marquette. We'll see if that bumps them out. North Carolina beats Wake and has a chance to play Duke on Friday. They were the last team in. You figure because they won and because they're North Carolina, they probably get a break. They probably want them in that first four Dayton scenario for ratings purposes, either that Tuesday or Wednesday in a standalone game. And then Texas was the first four out. I would imagine they're in with that win over A&M. And then you get to these teams like Boise State, who won. Colorado State is winning as we speak. And then the next four, we can just kind of leave there. So those are the bubble teams to keep an eye on. Indiana, Xavier might have played themselves out. I think North Carolina and Texas probably played themselves in. And then, we'll keep an eye on these Mountain West teams. The other interesting teams, if you see San Diego and VCU don't win their conference tournament, that is going to be a long day on Sunday, waiting to see their number called, waiting to see their name called. There's always a bias against these mid-majors to begin with. They don't get the opportunities to play big-time teams, especially UC San Diego. So I think they'd both get in if they don't win, but I would not bet on it, and I would not bet significant money on both of them getting in. I think I'd be very, very nervous if I was either team. So Indiana, Xavier, those are the teams you keep an eye on. I'm pretty confident Texas and North Carolina are in. You never know. Just because Lenardi thinks it or we think it and we assume it doesn't mean it actually comes to fruition. But those are some of the teams. And then the Mountain West, we'll see if the Boise State, Colorado States can eke their way into the tournament. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. Those teams probably figure maybe have to get to a final game. We're going off Lenardi's bracket. Who knows if somebody has a different version of this, a different opinion. But those are the bubble teams. And just, you can make a case. This Thursday of the conference tournament is just as good, if not better, than the first Thursday of March Madness. I would still go first Thursday of March Madness because it's the NCAA tournament. It's win or go home. It's the drama. It's the upsets. It's not, you're not really playing for keeps. For betting purposes, there's so many games. I'm recording this. It's almost 11 o'clock Eastern here. 11 o'clock Eastern on Thursday night. There are still 10 games to be played, and still 10 games being played, and four that are about to tip off. So, to give you an idea, Cal Poly, UC Riverside, 11:30 at night. I mean, you get the idea. There's just so many games in terms of the volume. And by the time you listen to this, it doesn't matter when you listen to this, there's either going to be a game on or a game about to start because it starts early again tomorrow with VCU St. Bonaventure in the 1-8 game in the A-10, VCU laying 10.5. Those early start time unders have been pretty good, although there was a bad, bad beat. Akron Bowling Green, 11 a.m. start Eastern on Thursday. Number was like 70.5, and there were 56 points scored. There was the total was 56. They were on they combined for 56 with about 2:15 left. And you figure you ain't gonna get 15 points in 2 minutes. It's one thing the end of a game when there's fouls and they're trying to chase points and score foul, that kind of thing. Not gonna happen at the end of the first half. Well, it landed on 72. Both teams just went crazy. There were some free throws mixed in, but these first half early start time unders have been very good. So we got Michigan State laying 5.5 to Oregon, Auburn laying 11.5 to Ole Miss, Memphis laying 10 to Wichita State, Loyola Chicago St. Louis doesn't do much for me, Wisconsin UCLA. Texas, Tennessee. Tennessee laying 10.5. That looks like a lot, but remember, you might be walking into a hornet's nest a little bit because Texas had to play on Wednesday. Then they played a double overtime on Thursday. Meanwhile, Tennessee's rested. So that could be a scenario where, maybe you play Texas in the first half, you play Tennessee in the second half, figure Tennessee pulls away. Just with some tired legs with Tech. Sometimes you overthink this stuff with the legs where, these kids play, they're young, they play a bunch of AAU games, they're used to playing, six, seven, eight games a weekend sometimes. But it is something to consider where they essentially played an extra half with intense basketball. They beat Vandy, had to play an extra two quarters or two overtime sessions against A&M. They got to turn around and play Friday afternoon against Tennessee. But it does look like a lot of points for a Tennessee team that struggles to score. I would look towards taking Texas. Probably in the first half, if anything, Akron, Toledo in the MAC, St. John's, Marquette. It's interesting. St. John's and Marquette played on Saturday and the line was 4.5, except Marquette was laying 4.5. And now St. John's is laying 4.5. I know you switched the venues, but that is a pretty dramatic, pretty drastic swing in terms of, the point spread home court. You're basically saying these teams are equal and each home court is worth 4.5 points. That's I know the situation was baked into it too, where St. John's may not have cared last Saturday. They already clinched the Big Ten, but it is unusual to see a team play within 5-6 days, two games in 6 days or so, and the line's 4.5 each way in different games. So shows the impact of home court. BYU Houston's a good game. BYU getting 7.5. I mentioned they've played well. I think 9 in a row they've won. That is a team that has an up arrow. Houston has not played great, was not impressive against Colorado. They've had a bunch of single-digit wins where they haven't been able to cover recently. You get Missouri, Florida laying 8.5. So a ton of basketball. And you get Duke and UNC. Duke laying 7.5. Those teams play for the second time in, 6 or 7 days. Weird to see them play on a Friday. Usually if Duke and Carolina play, I feel like it's an ACC title game. Just in past years, they're both usually so good. It's the 1-2. Usually it's not, the Friday is not unheard of. I remember the year Tatum was at Duke. They played North Carolina on a Friday. I remember Duke was like the 7-point. Duke with Tatum was like the 7-point dog. Of course, that was a really good Carolina team that actually, I think, went on to win it all. Yeah, that was in 2017. So that was the team that won it all. I guess it makes sense, but it was weird to think back. Duke with Tatum, 7-point dog. But that, I remember that being a Friday night game. But usually these teams play, if they play, is for the championship on Saturday. Illinois, Maryland's a good game. A lot of hoops, and just a great day on Thursday, and you should have some more action Friday. Once you get to Saturday, it slows down a little bit. You can almost catch your breath. That's the last day of, all right, there's still a ton of basketball, but you can kind of manage it in terms of trying to follow everything at once. Then Sunday, it really slows down, and you only get, I think, 4 or 5 title games. You get the Ivy usually, the A-10, Big East always finishes on Saturday, which I like, Big 12. There's 3 or 4 of them. The American usually finishes on Sunday. Then the Big Ten finishes on Sunday. You get 4 or 5 on Sunday. And it feels like nothing's on because you're just so used to the volume of 30, 40, 50 games and just game on top of game. By the time you get to Sunday and it's only a handful of games, it feels like it's certainly a different pacing. And it's almost like a Christmas Eve into Christmas feel once you get to Sunday. You just want these games over with. All right, whoever's in is in. Most of these teams are in by now. That's the thing. Once you get to Saturday or Sunday, except for the smaller bid leagues, these major conferences, most of these teams are already in, which does take a little bit of the juice out of it, except for the betting aspect of it. But once you get to Sunday afternoon, Sunday morning, you just want to see the bracket. You want to see the matchups. You want to see the spreads, which they do a good job of putting out quickly. So exciting weekend. Can't wait for it. Should be a good day Friday and then Saturday into Sunday when we get the brackets and we will break it all down. But coming up, Ian Eagle, get his thoughts. Who can win it all? Sleepers. Plus much more. That is next. This Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Our next guest needs no introduction. If you listen to sports, watch sports, you hear him everywhere. CBS, TNT, Yes Network, Westwood One. I think I named all the spots. It is the great Ian Eagle, the best broadcaster in all the land. Ian, thanks for coming on, man. March, do you, as a broadcaster, do you have favorite times of the year? And where does March rank? And again, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, well, appreciate it, man. Yeah, March is right up there just because it's coming. You know there are going to be storylines that you're not even aware of that are going to pop up, that are going to take over sports conversation in our country. There are going to be names that we're not even familiar with that will become March legends and tournament legends and schools that make a name for themselves in some form. And I think that's part of the beauty. It's unlike every other event because of that. Every other event that I cover, these are known entities. Even if it's somebody that's jumping from the practice squad to an NFL team, you've heard of him. You know him from his college days or his stint with another team. NBA, same deal. It's a two-way player. Oh, yeah. I remember that guy from 3 years ago. But college basketball, it's so large. And because of that, you don't really know what's going to capture everybody's imagination. I think that's part of the beauty of it.
Teams that could win it all. And I'm curious, teams you've thought and just takeaways from those teams. I think we'd all kind of agree Auburn, Duke, Houston, Florida. After that, Texas Tech, maybe Iowa State, maybe, although I think they got banged up in their Big 12 tournament game as we're recording this. I don't know. Can you expand past four? I'd love to see St. John's. I think it's a great story with Patino, New York. St. John's hasn't been relevant in so long, but man, they're shooting. Can they really win six? It's one thing to win four and make a Final Four. It's a whole nother thing to actually cut down the nets. We usually don't see, Cinderella winning the whole thing. What does your list look like in terms of teams that can win it all?
Well, I think you nailed the front end of it. And then St. John's and Michigan State are probably in the same category. They play exceptionally hard. They're an extension of their head coaches, Rick Pitino and Tom Izzo. They don't shoot it well. So the concerns you would have for either one of those programs is they get into a one and done format and they're down 13 and they're 7 minutes on the clock. They're not equipped to come from behind like some other teams might be, because the percentages tell you that they just don't make enough threes, and that can come back to haunt you. Now, can they out-physical a team? Can they out-hustle a team? Both are deep enough and work in bench players and will go with the flow if some of those bench players get it rolling. Those two head coaches have no problem adjusting their rotations, and they've seen everything, they've done everything. So I love the experience of both of those guys. Both are national champions. Both have adapted in many ways to what's happening in today's college basketball landscape, and they're okay with it. You have some that are not, that decided, hey, I'm good. Jay Wright is one of the great coaches that we've seen in how he handles players, his X's and O's, working with the university, working with alumni and the booster club, how he presented himself on television and radio. And even he decided, I think I'm good. I've won two titles. I've had enough. I don't want to play in this sandbox anymore. Tony Bennett, same situation. Patino, Izzo, they like it. They like getting down and dirty. They enjoy their teams are emblematic of that. So I probably would expand to those two as part of your initial grouping, just because their effort level is so high. And if they get the right draw, this is one of those years where I think they could make a run despite their deficiencies shooting the ball.
Yeah, it's funny. I was at an Iona Quinnipiac game 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago. Sunday afternoon game, early tip, but it was maybe 300, 400 people in the building. I'm like 30, 40 feet away from Patino. I'm thinking, my goodness, this guy, he's been to like seven Final Fours, won two national championships, made all this money, and he's sitting here in this gym in Hamden, Connecticut with nobody in there. So I'm kind of happy. I'm rooting for him. That being said, I watched him. You had the game 2 weeks ago against Seton Hall when they closed out the Big East. Oof, they won, but man, if Seton Hall could just make a shot, Seton Hall would have beaten them. That was a rough performance. That performance almost made me more skeptical of them. I worry they're just gonna have one night where the free throws don't fall, the threes don't fall, and I don't know, they get a tough whistle, somebody can keep them off the glass, that kind of thing.
And you would win that debate because everything you said is 100% factual and real. But the one thing, as we know, in the NCAA tournament is there is something about right place, right time, right squad. They just might have that mix of players that has the never say die attitude and the head coach that just knows how to get wins and how to manipulate wins. And you just laid it out a few years ago. He's doing it because he loves it. He wasn't doing it, in my mind, to maybe get back one day. I don't think that was his initial thought when he took the Iona job. Now, did it turn into something more? Yeah, it did. It was the New York area. He was getting some good publicity, and I think people were paying attention. And then St. John's, it took a little bit of a desperate situation where that particular school in this particular town needed to make that kind of statement in their next hire and get the fan base revitalized. And then, oh, by the way, get the money also revitalized in this new NCAA setup. You better have someone behind the scenes that's willing to write the big checks. And Rick has obviously found himself in a tremendous situation where this is not just an outlier year. I think based on who he is and how he operates, they're going to be good for as long as he stays there.
Yeah, my guess he's got another, 3 to 4 or 5 years left in him. I don't think this is like he's going to be done after this year or next year. My guess he's got a little more runway. Did you talk to him? Have you met with him, talked to him, gotten a sense of he actually thinks deep down this is a title team? Or does he think maybe it's not, it would take some luck, or is it not like the NFL where you don't get as much time to meet with these coaches?
I did not have a chance
Okay.
to sit down with him just based on our timing of that day and the fact that I was doing a bunch of other events leading up to it, including a net game the night before in Brooklyn. But Raf did, and Raf said the passion is still there. Everything that you think about Rick still remains. He loves doing this job. He believes that this group has something. He's hard on them, and that's the only way he knows how. I don't think he will ever change that part of how he approaches the job, which is you got to coach guys up and you got to be honest. And sometimes you got to be brutally honest. And if that means you hurt some feelings, then so be it. But that's how he looks at the job. And his passion level is still as high as I've seen it. And I've done games of his throughout a number of his different tenures along the way.
Yeah, it's funny. In one interview, I heard him refer to himself as a player's coach. Guys love to play for me, and being around him and just being close to him during a game, a player's coach is being generous. He is tough on everybody, tough on the players, tough on the refs. So it was kind of funny. Of all the teams you've seen, anybody better than people might think? A sleeper team? Who of the top teams have you seen? Take it whatever direction you like.
Yeah, I would say the one team that I could still see doing some serious damage in the NCAA tournament that's not going to be an upper seed is Illinois. They're really talented. I think they've got every box checked. They could play different styles. They're physical. They can run. They've got individual playmakers on that team. They've got a true point guard on that team. They've got the modern European big who can step out and make threes. They just haven't been healthy and they haven't lived up to their billing in many ways because of that. But I wouldn't want to see them. If I was a higher seed, I'd like to avoid Illinois if possible. To me, they're the one team that doesn't show up in the rankings the way that their talent may indicate that they should.
Completely agree. I've been talking about them for a while. I think at one point, according to the odds, maybe 6 weeks ago, they were like the sixth or seventh favorite to win the whole thing. Then just everything went wrong. Injuries, illnesses, opponents making every three. They couldn't buy a three. Maybe some of that is starting to correct, and probably not title upside, but Elite Eight, Final Four. I mean, they were neck and neck with UConn for a little bit last year
They were.
until they weren't. And that was still one of the more stunning with 30-0 runs, which is just something you never see. Just remarkable stuff. Do you know what region you get? When do you usually find out? Are you like sort of rooting for certain matchups? How does that process go? I know you were in the East region last year. I know a few years ago you were in the East. Are you typically going to be in the East region once the tournament starts?
No, there's no rhyme or reason
Okay.
to it, Will. My role obviously has changed through the years from 1998, when I got the gig calling the NCAA tournament, and that was not some kind of full-time gig. I got it on a flyer because CBS was in a transition period coming off losing the NFL and then regaining the NFL, and new management came in. And Jim Spanarkel and I got a shot as the eighth crew out of eight that year.
Wow.
And we were just happy to be a part of it. We got sent to Sacramento. I remember vividly when I got the phone call. This is pre-texting, pre-email, It was a phone call. You waited by your phone after watching Selection Sunday, and you would get a call from somebody from CBS Sports, and it was like slow motion. Well, they'd say where you're going. Hey, Ian, you're going to Sacramento. And now my head is spinning. I don't really know how to prepare for the tournament. I've got Maryland, I've got Arizona, I've got Illinois, I've got Illinois State, I have Utah State, I have Tennessee, I have Nickel State. Those are the teams that year. And now I remember the first team that I looked at to prepare for was Maryland. And the first name that I looked at was this Croatian player that I was concerned I was going to butcher his name. So that's the first thing that I dealt with. And I'm trying to learn the name. I'm repeating it over and over again. And it was Sharonis Yesikabichis. And I just broke it down into a Marv Albert impression. Yes, a cabochus. That's how I finally got it. I separated it with yes and a cabochus. And that was the beginning of the same feeling that I get every single year, right around this time of year. I can't prepare for teams that I have not been assigned yet. And it's one thing to have a good feel for college basketball. It's another to actually be in the weeds with the teams that you're actually calling on the opening weekend. So I'll get a phone call. Now we're more on the text email form, but I'll get an alert of some sort, probably 7:45 to 8:30 is the usual time frame. And in this year's case, I'm going to be flying home from Indianapolis in the Big Ten Championship. So I don't even know if I'm going to have internet on the plane. We're going to find out.
So that's an hour after the selection. You get a text or an email from somebody from Turner. Yes. Or CBS. And okay.
Correct.
Interesting. Always curious. Correct. How that worked. Big Ten tournament. And we've obviously just touched on Illinois, Michigan State. Do you get the sense just like big picture? How do coaches usually handle this? There's been a lot of talk about this, especially with the SEC being such a gauntlet. Do they want to win? Does it benefit you to maybe take an early exit? Is it coach to coach? Do you get this census from these coaches? It's sort of one eye on this tournament, one eye on the next week, and how they handle it?
Yeah, I do think it varies from coach to coach, approach to approach. Look, there are years where I've called conference tournaments, and I think it meant a great deal to the team that won it, to the coach that won it, that they're building a program, they're trying to create a winning culture. It's important to put a banner up. It's important to recruits to say, I'm going to the blank champion. And then there are other coaches that only look at the NCAA tournament as the mode of success. What's the compass here? The compass is to win it all and to be a factor. But I recognize different schools have different standards at this stage. And my sense is it varies coach to coach. Last year, I remember for Greg Gard in Wisconsin, it was important for them to go on a run and prove to people that they could play at a high level. And then guess what? They get James Madison in the first round and they get clipped in the NCAA tournament. So whatever success they had in the Big Ten tournament did not transfer over. Meanwhile, Illinois, another team that we talked about last year, they get it done in the Big Ten Championship. And then I think they did use that a bit as a springboard. And if not for UConn, Illinois easily could have been a Final Four team and represented a region, and nobody would have batted an eyelash over it. So it's based on circumstance, and for some coaches, it might mean a great deal more. And for others, all they're looking at is the big prize at the end of March into April.
Some NBA in the East, Cavs or Celtics?
I really love this Cavs team. I don't know if it's going to transfer over. You know, Boston, they just have the experience. They have a proven roster. They have a coach that's won the title already. I can't just shout from the rooftops that it's the Cavaliers conference to lose, because I still think Boston is going to be a big factor in here. Home court advantage. I know sometimes that is the difference maker. I'm not necessarily convinced that that's going to be the X factor this year. Cleveland's still going to have to prove it. They might be challenged along the way. Boston, my gut is that they still will have something to say about it. But in terms of storylines, Cavaliers going all the way would be a pretty cool way for this NBA season to end, with the way they built their team, the change they made in the head coaching ranks, and the way they've performed in the regular season to convince people once again that the regular season matters in the NBA. That would be Exhibit A if the Cavaliers could go the distance and win the whole thing.
Yeah, and I've been more Celtics than Cavs. I've been pretty confident with the Celtics, and this Cavs team reminded me a little bit like a better version of some of those Hawks teams that were really good, maybe like 10 years ago or so, but didn't translate to the postseason. But what kind of convinced me, at least made me start to second guess it. First of all, I mean, it's going to be like the quietest 70-win season you're ever going to see. I mean, the fact that they're flirting with 70 wins is just insane. Being down 25-3 in Boston, coming back to win. I know it's a regular season game, but that was a game that was that at least gets your attention. How about in the West, OKC or the Field?
I feel like I saw the germination of OKC last year. They lost to Dallas in the conference semifinals. I ended up doing that series on TNT. It ended in six games. Obviously, would have loved to have seen it gone seven, just to see how OKC would have handled it, how Dallas would have handled it. Who knows, how that would have changed history, and if the Mavericks would have viewed things differently, if Luka didn't get to the NBA Finals last year, would that have forced them to do something earlier and maybe entertain trade possibilities prior to when they actually did it in what seemed like the middle of the night and with nobody having prior knowledge? But OKC's been by far the most consistent team in the Western Conference this year. I love their roster. I love their head coach. I think Mark Daigneault is the real deal. He is super smart. It takes 2 minutes of sitting down with him to realize why they saw him as a future head coaching possibility when he was originally hired to coach their G League team. And I think, similar to what we talked about in terms of Cleveland, it would be a reminder of a team that was very professional during the regular season and tried to maximize every game and didn't do the old, "No, we're going to shut it down tonight. We're going to go injury management." They've been smart, but they also go for it. They play really hard. They play collaborative basketball. If you're asking me today, yes, they are my pick to go to the NBA Finals.
I was gonna bring it up. You hinted at it, Luka. Where were you when this trade went down? I mean, it was almost midnight on the East Coast, so you're probably in bed like a lot of us. Were you as shocked as the rest of us? Have you seen Luka and LeBron this version since the trade? And what are your thoughts? Is it as simple as they just got sick of this guy, didn't think he was going to be in shape? Is there more to this? It's still, man, six weeks later, I still am just like, there's a level of surprise, shock to me every time I see him in that Laker uniform. Really bizarre.
Probably similar to a lot of people on the East Coast, I was in bed. I was sleeping. I was coming off some wacky travel, I believe, for NBA and college hoops, and still coming off the football season, the whole nine yards. And I woke up, I grabbed my phone. Like so many people, you lie in bed for a few minutes and get the cobwebs out, going through my texts. And I had a text chain from my son, and I see the first one, and I think, "Oh, he got duped. This is a fake." And then I see the second one, and he even says in the text, "This is real. Can you believe this?" And this was all from the previous night, because he goes to bed later. And now I start playing catch up, and I really can't believe it. I'm trying to process it, trying to understand it. Obviously, like anybody else in the NBA, you start talking to people and trying to gain more insight and get more information. And I don't think it was as intricate as others have made it out to be. I think it really was pretty straightforward that their GM just didn't feel that signing Luka to a $355 million supermax deal was going to be sustainable. In his viewpoint, they were not going to be able to rely on him, and they were not going to be able to work in unison with him, that he was off doing his own thing and doing it his way. And instead of actually making him available to the rest of the league, he just wanted to do whatever he could do to get what he thought was going to be worthwhile value and not get crushed by the fan base if it leaked, because then the deal never would have happened, because they probably would have buckled to the public reaction. So he did what he wanted to do. It just was very misguided, and it's going to go down as a terrible, lopsided deal that absolutely alienated a fan base in Dallas. And it's going to take a while for them to buy in and trust again, and probably many, many years after this GM is replaced, where it will actually start to heal.
Yeah, really bizarre. I mean, I know there's recency bias with this stuff, but to say it's the most surprising, most stunning trade in the history of sports, at least in my lifetime, I don't know what would be ahead of it. I mean, it was just that out of nowhere, considering his age, his ability, the return, the timing of it, just everything. Just shocking. Last one, NFL, any of these moves do anything for you? And I don't think we've talked since football season. What a disaster it was for the Jets. I thought it was going to work. It does. It didn't. Do you think Rodgers has anything left? If he signs with Giants, Steelers, Vikings at the time of recording this, we are still unsure where he will be playing, if anywhere.
Does he have something left? Yeah, he has something left. He can still throw the ball. He's going to always be capable of throwing the ball. The issue for him is his offensive line and his processing. Can he do it the way that he once did it? I don't know how you could expect him to. It's just not realistic. But is there something left in that right arm? Is there a reason why teams are still interested? Yeah, they saw enough. They saw enough last year to say, hey, if we put the right team around him, this guy can still sling it and still has leadership qualities, and he's better than whatever the other option might be in certain cases for the Giants and for Pittsburgh in particular. Now, did any of these moves just blow me away and shock me? Yeah, a couple. I think what Las Vegas did was actually pretty smart. I do think Geno Smith will make them better, and it's an upgrade for them in 2025. It's not long term by any stretch, but by today's standard, you can win football games with Geno Smith as your starting quarterback. Seattle's reaction to it, Sam Darnold. I'm thrilled for Sam that he's gotten his career back on track, and he's a starting quarterback in the NFL, not in a battle for a position. It's his job. He's getting paid like it. Sam still has to have things around him that make sense, and the right communicator with him, the right guy calling the plays, the right pieces. I think Sam has learned a lot, and I'll be really curious to see if that ends up being a good fit. And beyond that, there's always things that are going to surprise you. What teams are willing to pay? Look, we are in a new world in the NFL, and when Dyami Brown can get a $10 million deal for 1 year, that shows you that this is a players' league, and you can make legitimate money. And that's a prove-it deal that he got, which means there were other suitors, I think. And it just shows you that if you've got talent and ability, there's a place for you in the NFL, and you can still make some pretty good cash. He could turn that into something much bigger, or it could be a 1 year washout.
Ian, you're the best, man. I know it's a busy time of the year for you, as it usually is once you get going. But we'll be listening for you on the call this weekend. Big Ten, NCAA tournament, so NBA playoffs not that far after it. Always fun to catch up, and I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, you got it. Well, to quote David Bowie, let's dance. Let's do it.
Thanks, Ian. All right, thank you to Iron Eagle. Rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back Monday. We will have a bracket to discuss. Gold Boys Discord, check it out there. Appreciate you guys. See you Monday.